comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. We are here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Remember that show I did, several months back? The guest on the show was Captain Robert McDonald, and he was on board a ship in the Baltic Sea. Remember that? And he was reporting to us live from on board that ship. Well, that ship was part of a private recovery effort. They were attempting to recover that very large circular object discovered on the bottom of the Baltic Sea. I know anybody that's been around the show for any length of time, you remember that. And, man, what a show, right? Well, during that show, or perhaps it was in an email after the show, but certainly right at the time and related to the show, I got a suggestion that I invite remote viewers to take a look at that. Well, I think it was the next day, I was talking with Jeff Harvey, and we were just talking about what was on the show the previous night, and he said that would be a great target for remote viewing. So it worked out. He, along with someone else that does remote viewing with him as part of his team, have taken a look at it. And tonight we are going to get to hear the results of their remote viewings. And this is hot off the press. And when I say hot off the press, I really mean it. Because just before showtime, in the couple of hours before showtime, the final report was coming in from the other remote viewer working as part of this team. And so we're going to get to hear really brand new information tonight from Jeff Harvey. He is with us. He is going to join us here via Skype, so you'll get to see him as well. And we're going to get to hear the report on this. And I'm very, very anxious to hear this report. I don't know all that's in this report. I do know a little bit. But and if that's all you got to hear, you'd be pretty excited yourself. So this is going to be quite an evening. Let me remind you, or if you don't know, let me inform you that we have a free weekly newsletter. It is called the K-Files. If you're not getting it, the question is, where's the genius in that? It's free. And it's always got great articles in it. It's always got some inside information from here inside the Kevin Smith Show. It's always got links to great videos related to our genre, and it's free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. So while you're at the site tonight, and you should be because it's free to watch tonight, while you're at the site, click where it says K-Files and subscribe. You're going to get an email with a confirmation link. Click it, and you're in. All right, we're going to take a break, and we will be back with Jeff Harvey right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And as I said, we've got a real special treat for us tonight. My guest is Jeff Harvey. Jeff has been a guest on this show a number of times over a number of years. And we've talked about a lot of different things. And one of the things that we have talked about previously is his work in remote viewing. And he is in that capacity here tonight. So let me just say, Jeff, welcome back. We are delighted to have you back.
Kevin, my pleasure. Good to talk to you again.
Well, let me get your volume up here. Okay. All right. Jeff, you no doubt remember when we had the conversation the day after I did that show. And, you know, as soon as I mentioned this thing on the floor of the Baltic, you said, man, that would be a great remote viewing target. And, of course, you didn't know I was sneaking up on you anyway to ask you if you would do remote viewing on this. But anyway, you did. And so you're here to talk with us about that tonight. But before we do that, folks, if you've been around for a while, you know Jeff went through a really, really grueling health issue that ended up with him having to have an amputation on his leg. And I've got to tell you, Jeff, you look great. You sound better. You know, I talked with you when you were in the hospital just before you had surgery, and you sounded dead.
I had a couple of days left to live.
Yeah. Well, it was pretty harrowing, actually. And I got to get your volume turned back up here, so let me switch the screen. It was pretty harrowing, and you didn't sound like you were going to make it. Talking with you before the surgery, you were pretty weak, and but you sound good, you look good, you getting around all right?
Yeah. I was 126 in the hospital, and I'm now in the 150s, and I've got larger arm muscles than I've had in 10 years. So the recovery is coming along nice. The muscle's building and the strength is up, and I even did a little bit of jogging for a short distance the other day.
Okay. Yeah, we're getting that roar really loud in your audio.
I just heard that.
Yeah. All right. So look, congratulations. I'm glad your weight is back up. I'm glad your muscle mass is back up, and I'm glad you're back up and around, and you're back at work now. Each and every day, so that's a good thing. Let's talk about this target and why you thought that would be a great target for remote viewing.
Well, the thing is that so little information hits the public that's got any validity to it. Because, as you know, all the media outlets, except for some of the internet outlets, are all strictly controlled by intelligence crews. Those intelligence crews are controlled by various different facilities and operations. Most of the U.S.-based intelligence agencies are controlled by the Navy. And they and many other groups internationally are controlled all the way down to the Vatican. So you don't get much news that's not massaged so that it toes the line. So as far as I'm concerned, anything you can get that has to do with something that is either extraterrestrial or unidentified should really be looked at carefully with at least two remote viewers. And the reason why is because most remote viewers, if you're well trained like we are, you're basically around 80% or a little better accuracy. But any two remote viewers who get the same information without actually collusion, they are going to be 100% accurate pieces of data. And so I thought it was a great idea to see if we could pull any data out that's not hitting the news that we didn't hear from the previous radio show. And we did indeed get some data.
I would say so. Now, you use a method, a technique for remote viewing that involves some technology. And the other person on your team does not use that. How does that, does that affect the results in any way?
Yeah, and I'll put it this way. As you know, I had that issue with the surgery in the summer. What you probably don't know is that in September the 28th, I was rear-ended on the freeway. And I was hit so hard, I actually passed out when I came to. I was in the other lane going sideways down the road. And what happened was I had a severe concussion, which created a lot of headaches, and I haven't been able to remote view since. I did one session a few days ago, and I absolutely forgot how to remote view. So it wiped out quite a bit. So it took me some time to relearn and reinitiate those cognitron pathways so that I could remote view again. So what I was doing was I've been playing with radionics now for some time with Carl Wells' generators, because they actually have a life energy generator in them so that you can power them. And you can set it so that you can get your brain into states that are extremely beneficial for doing things like remote viewing. And Walter Bosley, which you probably know is my teammate on this project, he is an extraordinary remote viewer. I trust his work tremendously because he gets things that other people in RV don't get. He looks at things from a different perspective, I would say psychically, and the data he gets has a lot more interesting elements in it that you can bring correlations in. So I like his work, but yes, I cheat with radionics. And the radionics program that I ran uses symbology. And the reason why I do that is a couple fold. As we talked about in the past, remote viewing is basically you reach out with your nervous system and your mind. Your nervous system is the antenna, your mind is the director. You go out to the field of information and you capture data bursts that are around that target or part of that field of information. And you copy them down onto paper, and then you assemble them at the end of the session. Well, those symbols that you pull in, those data bursts, come in as symbols and words. And archetypical symbols bubble up through your preconscious processing, and then they get sorted through a filter of your long-term memory to look for a match. Well, it's the opposite you're doing with radionics. In radionics, what you're doing is you're using archetypical symbols to project into your conscious and subconscious mind what kind of energies you're looking to attach your efforts to. And many people that understand astrology understand the power behind perhaps using the moon for intuition, or the sun for energy, or other planets for different things. Well, the basis behind that is that if you're using that symbology and using it to assist the remote viewing, it's like having an amplifier on your remote viewing session. And because of the concussion that I had and the headaches that I had, which are just now starting to pass properly, I was able to get similar session results to what I would have had I been doing this all along and not having had the damage. So it's a great way to cheat because it's like having an amplifier on your RV session.
Okay, and now you sent me a chart or a graphic of some symbols that I found pretty interesting. I don't understand what I'm looking at. And before we get to the actual remote viewing results, I think if we understand a little bit of what you went through to get these results, we kind of understand the process, I think we'll be better off. And so I'm going to show the audience the graphic you sent me. And it's just a chart of some symbols, and right in the middle we've got this chart with letters in it. What are we looking at here? What is this?
All right. Tell me which one you're looking at, because I don't have that on my screen.
Well, it's up in the upper left-hand corner. There are three yellow rectangles. In the middle of those where they intersect, there is a blue triangle. Right in the center of the page, there is a chart that looks like kind of like a crossword puzzle, but it's not a puzzle. It's got all these letters in filled in.
All right, this is a diagram or a symbol matrix that John McDonnell put together. Now, John McDonnell does the radionics testing and work and customer service for Carl Wells, who builds the radionics generators. And what John did was, and he's a master at this, he will take archetypical symbols, and many people who are involved in the old style of magic understand the action of symbols on the subconscious. And what he does is he assembles ones that will help get certain things done. This particular one is designed to help your unconscious mind find out secrets that are unknown. And you can assemble different symbols to actually do that with your mind. And this has been proven over and over for hundreds of years. They've been using this in many, many different societies, secret societies, lodge houses, that sort of thing. They don't teach this knowledge to the layman, but Carl Wells does. And so when I found out what he was doing and I checked the validity, I decided to go with it. And John put that one together, and that's a very integral part of the particular radionics program I ran last night, twice, before I did the session this morning as soon as I awoke.
All right. Folks, now, is there anything else you want to tell us about that before we get into the material, the remote viewing material? Anything else you want to tell us about the radionics?
No. The only thing I wanted to let you know is that people have been doing radionics operations since they were children, and they don't know it. Anytime you wished for something to happen, and you focused on it so hard and so long that something actually did happen, that was a radionics operation. Your mind had an abstract idea which became solidified when you had pictures in your mind, which we call structural links, of what you wanted to have happen, and you formed another structural link when you decided what the target was or what you wanted to get out of that operation. And so you use your own life energy or chi energy, which most martial artists will tell you is the same thing as prana, same thing as chi, and it's exactly the same thing as orgone. Your body draws it in and puts it out all the time. So when you have these things linked up, that's a radionics operation, and its success is dependent on having the two links and enough chi energy to make it happen. The generator basically provides that for you, so that you can now turn your attention to something else while the program keeps running and doing the job for you. All right, go ahead. That's pretty much it.
Okay. What we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, on the floor of the Baltic, you've seen on the Internet, there are sonar scans. This was discovered, really, I think, either at the end of 2010 or beginning of 2011, and these sonar scans show on the floor of the Baltic something basically circular. Not entirely circular, but basically circular. And speculations began to fly all over the Internet. These pictures were released by the guy that discovered them. And the speculations began to fly, and people began to say, oh, boy, that's a UFO, or that looks like the Millennium Falcon. And actually it does. It's shaped like the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars. And I did a show where I put them side by side so you could see that. It is shaped like that. But I've been very, very careful to say, I don't know what that is. I'm not saying that it is a UFO. I will say that certainly shaped like one, certainly shaped like the Millennium Falcon, but I don't know what it is. And so I'm making no claims about it. Now tonight, as we talk about this, Jeff, you've provided me with the sketches that you wrote down while you were doing the remote viewing. I'll be showing the final one to our audience. But within the last hour before the show, you got the sketch in from Walter Bosley, right?
Correct.
Yeah, don't show it yet.
Okay.
But you got it. I haven't seen it. I don't want to see it yet. Okay. And for those who are watching, I have another monitor over here where I can see Jeff. You cannot see him at the moment. But the point is this. We're going to take a look at both of these sketches tonight. We're going to see the information from both remote viewers tonight. Now, those who are new to the show, you don't know who Walter Bosley is. Walter Bosley is a former U.S. Air Force OSI. He is an Air Force officer. He was chief of counter-espionage operations at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And so he's a heavyweight. And he's a good guy, too. He's a personal friend of mine, great writer, publisher. He's no longer active duty in the Air Force. He's a writer and publisher. And really has all the skills to do what we're talking about doing here tonight, what he has done with the remote viewing, and is a trained remote viewer. So we're going to take a look at the results from both of these guys, and I think probably the first thing would be for you to sort of describe for us, if you will, Jeff, how you approached this, how you got started with it.
All right, are you talking about the mechanics?
Well, you know, you and I had that conversation, and you said this will be a great target for remote viewing, and then where did you go from there?
Well, the mechanics of putting together an operation is basically you need some target reference material. Now, if you have no pictures, no target reference material, you can simply design a cue or a set of words that are structured in a certain way to be able to get you to the target. And it's the same thing as radionics. You're forming a structural link to the target from an abstraction of your mind.
Okay, now I hate to do it, but I have to interrupt you here because we have a break that's going to take over in about 20 seconds, and I don't want you to get any further into that and then get interrupted. So we'll step away for a break, and when we come back from this break, ladies and gentlemen, we will hear how this was done, and we're just going to follow that thread all the way down to the results. We'll be back right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Jeff Harvey. And Jeff, I had asked you, if you would, to sort of tell us the process you went through to get this underway.
All right. The target reference material, the only thing we had was a sonogram that was supposed to be from the picture of where the craft was and the drag marks up to where it actually stopped in the sand or the ocean floor. Now, two things you have to remember is when you pick something up off of YouTube or the internet, you can't be 100% certain of its validity. But after speaking with you and what you spoke of with me, I'm reasonably certain that we had a good sonogram, because there are intelligence groups out there that don't want this information out, and they're certainly not above putting a fake sonogram out or modifying one that's already out there so that if you were to remote view it, you would get nothing or bad results. So what I did was I did a sneaky end run around it, and I designed a queue that would take me to the item without having to use the sonogram as target reference material.
Okay, and you got Walter involved in this. So does he use the same queue?
He uses exactly the same queue, the exact same target reference numbers.
Okay.
But he doesn't know what the queue is. All he gets is the reference numbers.
All right, so...
didn't know what we are actually looking for the end result. He just knew that we were going to do something on the Baltic issue. He knew what the numbers were, and he had to reach out with his mind, with his nervous system, and pull that data in and get bursts of data that correlated with my data.
Okay.
Mine needed to correlate with his.
So let me say this about the side-scan sonar imaging that is on the internet and that we have, and it's up on the screen now. What you see on the internet, if you see this picture, is blue. And what I did is for purposes of tonight, I just removed the blue so that we can see black and white in contrast. It's a little bit easier to see what we're looking at. And the images, the side-scan sonar image that you see on the internet and that you see here, these were made by the captain of a ship. He is a professional treasure hunter. He's been doing it for 18 years, and he's the source of this photograph. So I'm reasonably convinced that this photograph has not been monkeyed with. I'm pretty convinced that this is the actual one. Now, let me tell you why. Apparently, someone had told him that we did this show with Captain Robert MacDonald. He didn't apparently hear the show, and whoever told him gave him some bad information, saying that we were making up stories and making up things. And so he and I had kind of a running battle on Facebook about it, and I explained I don't make up anything. The guest comes on the show and says what the guest says, and I don't make up anything. Whatever the guest says, that's just what the guest says. And anyway, that kind of simmered down to him retracting his statement that I had made it up. And the reason that I am bringing that up is because I think if these photographs had been monkeyed with, he would have reacted. He's not in the United States. He is not a U.S. citizen. He's not subject to the United States being heavy-handed with him. I think he would have reacted because when he had heard certain things that were not accurate, but he believed them to be true, he did react to those. I think he would react if his pictures had been monkeyed with. So I am personally convinced that we're looking at the pictures that he took. So you did your remote viewing, and take us into the sessions and tell us, what did you find?
Well, it was rather interesting because not knowing what Walter had done, because Walter didn't do it until just prior to showtime, so I barely had time to analyze his data and compare it with mine. But initially, when we do one of these, the first thing we do is make connection to the target, and we generate an ideogram, which is basically an ideomotor response that you use pen and paper and jots down a little ideogram that can be decoded, by the way. And the next thing we do is we go over and we take a look at what is the feel that you get, you know. And I had thick mucousy and filmy. Then you go into colors, then you go into taste, temperatures, sounds, then you go into dimensions, and then you have an aesthetic impact or an emotion. Well, interesting to note that basically what happened was Walter and I had some very similar issues.
All right, well, let's do yours first, and then we'll get you to put Walter's up on the screen in front of the camera there, and we'll take a look at it. I'm going to put your page up, the ST page, and let's just talk about what we're looking at here. These sketches and notes are from your remote viewing.
All right. I'm not going to discuss the SD first. I'm just going to give you a couple of quick things on the first page because this is very germane to it.
Okay.
I was looking at the colors. I got dark. I got white. And then I got nothing on taste, but I got cold. And then I got this thumping, low-frequency sound that came in. And then on dimensions, it was over and arching. And my feeling was, is I was perplexed. That was the emotion that I had. And what we do is we try and diffuse any emotion out of the particular session that we do. And so being perplexed, I moved on because I got rid of the emotion out of it so I could get back to doing the work. Because if you allow emotion to rise up or do any thinking or any creative imagination work, you screw the whole session up, which makes remote viewing an exceptionally interesting art to perform. Because you have to learn how not to think and not to allow your imagination into the process. And that takes quite a bit of skill, and it takes a little time to do it, several months usually in the beginning. All right, so now going to the ST page that you're showing, if you take a look at the top, there's a date up on that scan, and I put the date on at the end. And so it started at 10:02 a.m. local my time. And I don't know what was going on at the site at that time or that hour, but this is when the time was, and it took me till 10:39 to complete the session. And the first object is down at the bottom. Now, if you look at that picture at the bottom, you're basically looking at the side view of something that's round. It looks like it's oval, but you're just looking at the side view of it. And the top portion of it, I was trying, and I'm not a great artist, by the way, as you can probably see from my stick figures here. The top of that was supposed to illustrate an opening in the top of that oval or round item, but we're looking at it from the side. Now, something that's anomalous in the way that I remote view, normally when you do an S1 and S2 of something, whether it be the target or the A component, you write down from the top of X or A or whatever it is you're looking at. Something should be perceivable. You generate another ideogram so that you're connecting to that target. And then the next items you jot down are supposed to be viewing it from the top. Well, from day one in remote viewing, I have always, even though I wrote down something should be perceivable from the top, I always view it from the side. Now, I don't know if that's a defect in the way my brain is wired or if I just look at things differently, but that's why you're looking at this and you're not seeing a round object, you're seeing an oval object from the side. So it would be a round, saucer-like object, but it's reasonably thick and the top of it has a round-ish opening at the top. Now, my aesthetic impact on that was inquisitive and tempted. Now, I also got an EI. Now, an EI is an emotional impact at the target of somebody other than me. So, at the target, I got tension. So, whatever the occupants were in there, I got tension on. Also, deep came up and grapple came up. Now, deep is something that Walter and I agreed on. We both got deep on it. I had grapple and a down arrow underneath of this, showing that something was anchoring it to the bottom. Now, that does seem a little odd knowing what we know about some type of craft, but that's what I got. To the right was a word called pastoral, meaning it was like a pasture setting. And I really almost erased this off of the particular session, but then I realized if you're looking at the bottom of the Baltic, you're probably looking at something of a pastoral setting with wavy sand and rolling meadow-like sand. So that's where that probably came from. Then, at the top, I had cleansing, tossing, and when I was talking with Walter, he got tossing as well. Twisted, granular, and gritty I had. Open-framed, and we're talking about that part on the top of the oval there, and then widening, increasing, and penetrating. And my thought was is that perhaps there might have been some damage, and maybe there was some penetration, and the granular, twisted, and gritty may have just been the surface structure, or perhaps there was some damage done to it. That's the only thing I could consider. Then over to the right, you notice when we're looking at the bottom of that, it was tested, liquid, gauze, and patchwork, tasty, green, wispy, and soft. Now, a couple of those Walter also got, especially the patchwork and that, and the liquid was interesting. Now, I find it interesting because if you look at the side of an object like that, if that was a biomaterial, meaning a biological entity material on the outside, that would explain the green, the wispy soft, the patchwork, the gauze-like patchwork, and the liquid would certainly be definitive of a biological sheet on the outside. And that may be for protection or for protection against the elements down there. I don't know. All right, so that was the item that's on the seafloor. Then, up above that, and during the session when I was RVing and getting the bottom of the seafloor, I also got, up above that, fun and fanfare.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll take up right there when we come back. We shall return, folks, right after this. Welcome back. We are talking this evening with Jeff Harvey, a remote viewer, and we're talking with him about this really amazing object that's on the floor of the Baltic. And we know about it because of the sonograms, the side scan sonar imaging that was done earlier this year. Perhaps it was done late last year. I'm not really sure about the date of that now. I was sure about it when we did the show before, but I'm an old guy and I forget stuff. So anyway, we've got with us tonight Jeff Harvey. And Jeff, we had to kind of interrupt you there because of the break taking over. So we'll pick up where you left off.
Kevin, your audio just broke up.
Jeff, pick up where you left off.
Okay, I just got your audio back. All right, very good. If you look up above this, are you showing the picture on the ST right now?
It's on the screen.
All right. Well, I had some very odd things that popped up. One was fun fanfare. I also got gorgeous, saucy, and pink all together. Now, my thought was, is we both know there's quite a few ships up above, so I don't know if I was picking something up there, maybe a passenger on one of those ships or not. But I also got cheap, squirrely thought, sobbing and crying, and incriminating consequences. I have no clue how they fit in or why, but there was too much that correlated there for me not to put it and incorporate that into my ST. Now let's go into the object that's very far away up above the object on the seafloor. Now
explain that. What do you mean the object that's up above very far away? What are we talking about?
When you do a remote viewing, you're looking for the target, which is X. And then if you have other elements that come up when you're looking at your initial view of the site, or what's connected to what you're looking for, you may get other elements like A, element B, element C. Well, element A on this not the target, but element A associated with the target was a circular form that came up, and I got boatloads of data with it. And my feelings were crestfallen, deep desire, and anguish. Now, crestfallen is usually something that you feel when something you believe in turns out not to be true, or you're extremely disappointed or shattered in some way of your view. So whatever that was relating to, I don't know. But I did also notice that the EI, or the emotions of some other entity at that location, was also tense, and that matched the tension from the one at the bottom of the seafloor. So there's more than one entity involved, and more than one object. Now, when we get to Walter's, and I hope Walter calls in later, because he has some really interesting ideas of what this could possibly be and how it got to be there. But let's go and finish up the rest of this picture.
All right.
So we went over that. Tepid was something that I showed as a temperature that was up there. But now let's go into the actual object itself and see what we get. I've got tested, awesome, which I underlined because it really did, it really, that was one of the major words that came up as an intangible that needed to be jotted down. Then deep, widening, and open. Also white. And then fleshy metal. Very interesting, especially if you have a biological skin on it. Then also classic, frosty, granular, and glazed, and grimy. Very similar to the skin on the other object. So it appears that there's a relationship between the two, or it could be the same thing, just dimensionally shifted, temporally shifted, or it actually got there from above or far away.
All right, now this other object that you have, this circular object that's above the one that's on the floor of the Baltic, did you have any sense of, I mean, when you say above, is it in the water, on the surface of the water, out in space?
Far. Very, very far.
Okay.
We're talking way above the surface and more than likely above the planet.
Okay, so you got I jotted down here some things that you've said, that the occupants of this thing, the one that's on the floor of the Baltic, you picked up an emotion of tension.
Correct.
Inside of this thing.
Correct.
And you also picked up a thumping sound.
Correct.
It may be impossible to do, but can you try to describe for us something that we can associate with? What would it have sounded like?
All right. In my mind, when I was removing this, and I got the thumping, did you ever see the movie Dune?
Yeah.
All right. Do you remember the thumpers they used to call the worm?
Yeah.
That was precisely the sound I heard.
Okay.
That would be the closest I can get to it. Very low, very deep, a little bit muffled compared to what that was on the movie, but almost identical frequencies, almost identical tone, and almost identical depth. Not quite as fast, but it was pretty darn close.
And was it sustained? Did it continue, or was it?
It was continuous, but again, remember, when you're picking these up, you only take 2 to 3 seconds to pick up your sounds, your dimensions, your tastes, your temperatures. So I only tuned in for 2 seconds max. I do that because most people can go 4 seconds before their imagination takes off or they start thinking about it. Mine will happen sometimes in a little over a second, so I make 2 seconds my maximum that I'll focus on anything so that the bursts are cleaner and I don't have any overlays.
Okay, so after you did all of this, and you sat back and you looked at it and you analyzed it, did you come to any conclusions based on your remote viewing before you saw Walters? Did you come to any conclusions?
Yeah, as far as I was concerned, there were two objects, whether or not they were temporally different, meaning it was the same object, just two places at two different times, or whether it was two separate objects. I don't know that one, but my feeling is that there's two separate objects. I can be convinced the other way. I am leaving that open because I don't know it for a fact, and I didn't get enough of a sense to lock into that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this was a initial target touch where we simply just reach out and we attempt to connect to the target and see what our initial items are that we get to see whether it's BS, it doesn't even exist. And the way we would know that is if this thing was not real, Walter and I would not have gotten the same thing, and we would have gotten information that just didn't correlate. It would be nonsense. It would just, there'd be nothing that would match anything that would be something you could lock onto. Well, this was very definitive, it was clear, and the things that happened during the session that came out in this convinced me that what I'm looking at is pretty darn close to the end result.
Did you pick up any energy sources in there? Now, we've got less than a minute here before we go to break. Any energy sources?
I didn't pick up on anything like that, but I didn't focus. But I will tell you this. I'm not convinced the thumping was coming from that object on the seafloor.
Well, where do you think it could be coming from?
Don't know. Maybe there's some folks down there putzing around in the area.
Oh, wouldn't you have picked up on them?
Maybe that's part of the other nonsense that I was getting at, like the squirrely thought, the sobbing, the crying, the incriminating consequences, the fun fanfare. Those are items that could have been coming from a ship above that might have had some sort of low-frequency item going.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay, the big question. Before you saw Walter's work and talked with Walter, were you convinced that this thing was from this planet or off planet?
That's the problem. I'm not convinced either way, but if I was to lean one direction, I would think that this was an off planet object.
What would make you think that it's off planet?
Two things. What I felt inside the session, and number two, why would all those ships be up there and not doing something? This was one of ours.
Okay, got to step away for a break. We'll pick up there when we come back. Don't go away, folks. To the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening is none other than Jeff Harvey. And ladies and gentlemen, those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, you have literally missed universes of information. I express my deep sympathy for whatever kept you from the first hour. But what we're doing is we are taking a look at the results of remote viewing. Jeff Harvey and Walter Bosley have taken a look at, both of them, excellent remote viewers, and they've taken a look at this thing that was discovered on the floor of the Baltic. Now, you remember several months ago, two or three months ago, I had a show where we had a guy by the name of Captain Robert McDonald. Captain McDonald is a ship's captain. He was serving as a consultant and he was on board a ship, a recovery ship in the Baltic, that was one of several recovery ships, and they were attempting to recover this big thing that's rather circular. A lot of people say that looks like a UFO, and he described for us live from on board the ship some of what had been done to try and recover this object. And as you may remember, they lost two submersibles in the effort. Very strange things happened to the submersibles as they got down near this thing. Well, tonight we're talking with Jeff Harvey, and Jeff is sharing with us the results of his remote viewing. And Jeff, let me ask you, have you did you in your remote viewing pick up anything about any gouge marks on the floor of the ocean?
Not in my session. My session was based on the target itself, which was the actual object. So I didn't even try to target the gouge marks on the floor.
Okay. Let's talk about Walter Bosley. Let's talk about Walter Bosley's sketch that he sent to you just before the show. And folks, Walter is in California, and Jeff is over in the eastern side of the United States. So he sent you his sketch, I think. And do you have it there?
I do. I've got it right here.
All right. Can you hold that up and talk to us about it?
Sure. I also sent it to you on email.
Yeah. Too late for me to get it into the software.
No, I got you. All right. I want you to take a look down at the bottom.
No. Back up. You're too close to the... There you go.
All right. That looks a little bit like a basketball, right?
Yeah.
And you notice in the center there's like this oval eye-like opening?
Yeah.
All right. I want you to take that object and look at that as a saucer or circular-shaped object. And you're looking at it from the top right now. But if you were to look at that from the side, what you would see is that.
Okay.
So, basically, if you look at both of our STs, we are agreeing on that. Now, what's interesting is, I want you to take a look, I think you can see it here. There is an angle there. Do you see that angle?
Yes.
All right, now, let's go back to the beginning of my session, where I get my very first archetypical images. And if you take a look, I have a line there. And do you see at the bottom of the line, there's a little tab almost like it was starting an angle?
Yeah.
When I was in the middle of the session and doing it, I was going to draw that angle exactly the same way that Walter did, and I stopped myself, and I didn't know why I did that at the time, but I thought I should have continued it out. And if you were to overlay these two together, you'd find out they are an exact match for the angle. So let's go take a look at Walter's again, because Walter has some really interesting data on here. Now, if you look here, we've got an object here, which is an oval arching item. And if you remember, when I was talking about my initial first session impact, I had over an arching in the first touch with the target. So it's kind of interesting that we've got the same exact thing there. We've got the same angle in it. And the only difference is according to this, it's coming down from a far distance away. And if you look up here, let's see if I can get this up for you a little bit better. Can you see that any better there, or is it pretty foggy?
It's a little close for us to be able to read it. But what is the word that is under that, the top line of the angle with the arrow coming down, and then under that there's a word? What is that?
All right, at the very end of the top of the angle it says start, and the words underneath it says shot from. meaning shot from the start, and then coming down on the angle at a high velocity, and then ricocheting off of that arched thing, and going off to the side.
Well, that sort of looks like you had two objects that had a collision.
Yeah, that's an entirely good possibility. I absolutely can't discount it, and I like the idea because it makes sense based on the things I see from his.
All right, so what are some other things that Walter found in his remote viewing that describe this object?
All right. Let me read for you what we have. I don't have the rest of his template because we didn't have time to transfer that. But basically, when it comes down at the angle from wherever it was above the water, it makes a turn and not a ricochet. I'll have to correct that. I said ricochet earlier, but what I meant was it was a turn and not a ricochet. So it was actually a directed change of direction. It was a conscious change of direction away from that arching item, which is white. And it also has orange or white. And then down below that, the saucer was white and the opening was orange. And so the colors we have matched. Because I got white as well. I got a couple other colors as well, but mine were more to do with the darkness of the water than it was the color of the object. And that was the impression I got when I was doing that. But that's, if I go back through mine and I compare it to his, we consistently have white in all of our parts of this. So I'm convinced that that's dead on accurate 100%. Now, it's interesting that it is white, but maybe that's just the color of the skin.
All right, so what about sound? Did Walter get anything for sound?
He may have, but I didn't get that part of his remote viewing session, so I was hoping maybe he'd call in, but I don't know if he will. He was pretty busy today.
Yeah.
But if he does, we'll get some of that data from him.
Okay, so you two guys had an opportunity to talk together for just a few minutes before the show, right?
Correct.
And what is it that Walter thinks this thing is?
Well, he's of the same opinion. He thinks it's a craft, but we just don't know how it got there. We were talking about some of the possibilities, and all of them are within the realm of possibility. You could think about this as being a cross-dimensional transfer. It could have been just a straight driven down through the waves, and then made a turn when it got to that arching structure, whatever that was. Or maybe it was another object, and it made a turn away from it. It could have been a submarine. It could have been a bathysphere gap. It could have been a dirigible down there. You don't know what it was. But whatever it was that made the turn, it did that in a conscious fashion for a reason. And so we're both of the opinion this is craft.
Are you of the opinion that there are living occupants in that craft?
Based on what I got with the tension for an emotional impact, yes.
I
don't think a hunk of metal is going to have an emotional impact of tension.
Okay. Were you able to detect whether there's more than one being inside this craft?
That's the problem. I didn't go deep enough on that. I can't honestly tell you if the other items that I picked up were from a ship up above on the surface or an occupant. Now, from a single male point of view, I'd like to think that the gorgeous saucy in pink was an occupant. I can't tell you if that's the case.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what I would like to do. I would like to invite our audience to participate in the discussion. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone lines are open and the telephone number is now appearing on your screen. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. You've been sending me email wanting to know. You've been sending me private messages in our members community wanting to know, do I have an update on this? Well, here you go. And this is your opportunity to wade in here and participate in the discussion, and I invite you to do so. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Chris from Oregon, Chris Brown.
Hello, Chris.
How are you doing?
Good.
Oh, good, good. I just seen that you were on here. I thought I'd listen to it, and I was really interested in what he was saying, and I was kind of still unsure, didn't really know one when he said there was from the Baltic Sea the disc at the end of there, and then there was something that was just on top on the water. He said it was up in space or above that direct area where that disc is.
Okay,
was kind of been confused on that of the.
All right, well, let's let him address that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, the object, the main target, was on the ocean floor from what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
There was what looks like a second object that may have been out in space. It was certainly a long, long distance above the surface of the waves. And my impression was it was not anything in low atmosphere. It seemed like it was either in orbit or even further out.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just curious on that. I wonder maybe if it was in the water and that thing was all the way down, you know, however many miles down there, and something was floating on top of that. You know, I didn't know. But all right, well, yeah, that was kind of all I really just
all
kind
right.
of want to know. And so, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chris, for the call. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And like I said, folks, you have an opportunity. It always amazes me when people send me email later and say, I wanted to ask this, I wanted to ask that. Well, we spent an hour giving you the phone number. So, you know, if you like that feature and you feel like that's a good feature that you get to talk with a guest, then do it. And if you don't like that feature, believe me, I can drop it. And 623-444-5889. All right, you're under the impression, having done the remote viewing now, that what we're looking at here in the side scan sonar is a craft. That's a big craft.
That's a huge craft. Didn't they say that it was something like 60 yards across?
Meters.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's still the better part of a football field.
Yeah, that's 60 meters, about 170 feet, something like that. Yeah, it's big.
A couple of people in there.
Yeah. Did Walter pick up on occupants?
Not in the ST that I see, but he may have had it in one of the other pages of the file. So if we get a call from him, we'll be able to ask that question, but not on the final ST. But now he does a truncated version to get to the meat of the matter. And
mm-hmm.
his truncated version works well, so I don't know the answer to that.
Well, we certainly hope Walter will give us a call, but as you say, he is a very, very busy individual these days. Because he's involved not only with writing and publishing, but he is also involved with filmmaking. And so he is a very busy individual. Okay, and ladies and gentlemen, the telephone lines are now closed. If you and I were sitting down to have a cup of coffee, and you I didn't know anything about this, and you were just going to say, okay, well, Kevin, you know, we did this remote viewing, and man, we really came up with some fantastic stuff. Let me tell you about it. How would you tell someone? How would you describe this?
Oh, I like the way you ask your questions. Boy.
Well, that's why they pay me the big bucks.
Let's pretend I'm talking to a friend of mine, Evan. He is using the Rad 2400 HD for his radionic sessions, and he's doing extremely well. So he may actually be the next fellow I train in RV, because he's pretty darn gifted. All right, so if I was talking to you or him and we were sitting down having a conversation, I'd say, and this actually happened this afternoon. I said, you know, we went down through it. I showed him all of my sketches and graphs, and I said, I'm pretty well convinced there's a craft on the floor. And it looks like we have another object either in deep space or orbit around the planet or somewhere out there, but it's certainly not close in any regard, because it's far. And the parts that really tweaked me in the middle of the session was when I put together the ST and I saw fleshy metal as a descriptor for the object that was up above. I found that kind of interesting. And the other thing is the gauze-like patchwork of the skin of the one on the floor. And the fact that both of them showed up as granular, in gritty, frosty, glazed, that sort of a type of coating. So when you get two items that ostensibly are connected in some way with the same type of skin, you have to come to the conclusion they come from the same origin or source. And of course, those are two different things. The origin of them could have been a factory somewhere. The source could be totally different. So,
okay, explain that. How can the source be totally different?
Well, let's say you've got an object that, a meat cleaver, right? You know, the source of that might have been the factory where it was made, and the origin may have been the ore in the ground that they actually made it from.
Okay.
So you have to look at, you know, those things. When you set up a queue, you got to be extremely careful. Now, in my queue, I was a little different in the way I did it. I did a sneaky approach just in case that sonogram was not correct. Even though I used that as target reference material, I was looking for a connection to the Baltic UFO passenger or passengers and clear bursts of accurate information. Now, by doing that and targeting the clear bursts of accurate information with regards to that Baltic object, now I'm actually targeting the information that connects to it, not the actual object. And by doing that, I get a clear image of the signal line data without getting any kind of interference from bad data on a sonogram that might have been doctored. I didn't know at the time. Obviously, I hadn't spoken to you by then. But I did an end run around it to make sure I could still get the same information at the end if I had targeted the object directly than targeting the information that relates to it.
Do you think that while you're there doing the remote viewing, are you detectable by the occupants?
My impression is, if you can travel across the galaxy and you don't need EMF radios like we use, the odds are pretty good that yes is the answer to that.
So now, do you think you were detected?
I think. I'll explain why I say that. Several nights ago, I used the radionics program to do, how would I phrase this? Think of it as a very light initial probe of the object. And I did that using the radionics program with absolutely no remote viewing. Remote viewing is a very brute force method of getting data. Now, I say brute force because you're going down and taking it by the short hairs and pulling that data in. Now, when you use the radionics device, you can tickle the object or the person and just basically lightly touch them and see if you get any impressions back. And that's a very subtle way of exploring a subject, an object, or a person. And so when I did that, my impression when I began running the radionics program was that contact was not, I shouldn't say invited. Contact was not invited, but there was no mean, angry, hey, I'm pissed off, you're looking at me when I'm not wanting you to look. Nothing like that came across. So as far as I was concerned, when I ran the radionics program, I guess the way I would phrase this is it appeared as if the contact was noticed with the radionics. It was not shunned or rejected or met with any kind of negativity, but it was not invited and it was not encouraged. So that's why when I did the remote viewing the night before, I targeted the information field, not the actual object. I targeted the information field associated with the object so that I would not be basically, how would I phrase this, opening up the front door of somebody's home and peeking in without being invited.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this, so don't go away.
Listening to the Kevin Smith Show, talk radio like nowhere else on earth, healing medicine for the mind.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking this evening with Jeff Harvey. And Jeff has been describing for us the results of the remote viewing sessions that both he and Walter Bosley have done related to this mysterious thing on the bottom of the Baltic. This mysterious thing on the bottom of the Baltic is, quite frankly, shaped very much like the Millennium Falcon from the Star Wars movies. Let me ask you, Jeff, when you were looking at it, did you get that impression of it, looking at it from the side?
Sure looked like that. You also asked a question earlier on whether or not you thought it might be...
We can barely hear you, Jeff.
Okay, let me... hold on. How is that any better?
It's better. We're getting strange audio artifacts out of your microphone, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just heard that in the background. It's like an echo. You had also asked a question about whether or not I thought it was extraterrestrial. And my impression is that if it was ours, we never would have even gotten close to it.
Well, we picked up about every other syllable. Try it again.
All right. My impression was that if it was ours, military, my thoughts are that we never would have even gotten close to it. If it was military, they'd have gone and picked that thing up long before anybody got to that thing. So I don't think it's ours, and I don't think it's terrestrial.
All right, now, you told this friend of yours that's, you said he's into radionics as well. You told him about it. What was his impression after being told about it? Did he think you had lost your mind?
No, Evan is extremely open-minded, and he's extraordinarily analytical. I'm a little surprised he didn't go into your field of endeavor or your past field, because he looks at things with a very analytical eye, cold, hard facts, period. And one of the reasons I enjoy his company is because he actually helps keep me in check by asking me really critical questions, which helps me rethink some of the things I do. And one of his friends also has the same exact device, Mike, and he is starting to pursue the radionics and these sort of things. So what I may do is I may do a remote viewing training for the both of them and see if we can't get them trained up, and we'll add a couple of more to future projects.
All right, now, when you picked up not just this object that's on the floor of the Baltic, but you picked up also that there was something way, way out there, another object, also circular. You said whether it's in orbit or deep space, you don't know. But it was out there. Did you sense that it was in communication with the object on the floor?
Just a moment. Let me take a look at this. I got no data regarding a connection with it other than they were linked in some way, whether they were the same object at two different times or whether they were two separate objects at the same time in two different places. So no, I didn't get the impression that there was any communication, but I do find it really odd that both of them had tension as part of their emotional impact. So that almost basically says there was some sort of communication, or at least they knew the situation of the other. And then let's take it from the viewpoint. Let's say you're in near-Earth orbit or far orbit, and you are in communication with the object on the floor, and you see all of these ships from the various navies above it in the general vicinity. You're going to be pretty tense, just as they would be.
If there are occupants, assuming that there are, I'm just playing the devil's advocate now, assuming that there is at least one occupant and maybe more in this craft on the bottom of the Baltic, assuming that's the case, it apparently has been down there for a very long time. Why would there not have been some sort of rescue mission from above to get these folks out?
Well, if it was a monitoring station, that would not be the case.
Ah.
As you and I both know, in clandestine monitoring, your job is to hopefully not be noticed and watch all the foot traffic going by. Well, in this particular case, it may have very long-range sensors that give extraordinarily good imaging, and maybe it was watching the submarine SSBN fleet.
So then in that scenario, we're looking at an alien reconnaissance operation.
That's my point.
Well, you don't do reconnaissance unless you're planning an ingress and egress, do you?
That's what I'm wondering, because when I'm looking at the object and I see the part where it's twisted, granular, gritty, open-framed, it's widening, increasing, penetrating, I almost get the impression that it's damaged. Now, you're correct that you would think there'd be some sort of a rescue operation by the other craft if there is another one in orbit. And so, if that's the case, then you have to know that this thing wasn't there that long. Otherwise, they would have been there. Excuse me. And so my thought is that we either have a temporal issue where it was discovered just as the other craft was coming to meet with it, or there is no intention of it ever leaving. And then you go to the other question, okay, why are all those military ships up above it and not doing anything about the quote-unquote salvage operation. And so let's take that a couple of steps into that little nest egg. All right, let's say that it is extraterrestrial, but we know about it, and several countries know about it because of the ships that are down there. And they are just simply there to make sure nobody does recover it or disturb it, because maybe there's a cooperative effort going on.
Well, the story that we got live from on board one of the recovery ships is that they had sent submersibles down twice and had lost both of them. One of them simply disappeared from the end of the tether just as it was about to land on top of this object. The other one, just as it was about to land on top of the object, there was a flash of light. It had cameras on it. There was a flash on the video screen, and then the cameras went dead. And so when they pulled it back up, it was still on the tether. It was melted.
All right. Now, the question is going to be, where did the energy come from that melted it?
Uh-huh.
Did it come from the craft? Or did it come from support craft? My impression would be from the craft itself. But that's, we don't know that for a fact. But the energy obviously came from somewhere. Now, if it was our military that was guarding this object, they may have used a directed energy weapon to make sure nobody got any close-up pictures of it that they could actually transmit. That's a possibility. Not like we don't have directed energy weapons.
Okay, would that have to have been fired or activated, say, from a submarine?
Well, that's the thing. We don't know, because there's no way to tell, because it came back a hunk of scrap metal.
No, I'm asking about the technology of the directed energy weapon. Would it have to be fired from a submarine, or could it be fired from space?
We have satellites that have directed energy weapons, we have ships that have directed energy weapons, and we have submarines that have them. It's your guess is as good as mine where it came from. My thoughts are, though, that it was more likely a submarine.
That would have had to been from a very long distance away, because these ships have very modern equipment on them, including radar and sonar, and so if there was a submarine in close proximity, they would have seen on their screens. So this would have had to have, if it was a submarine, it would have to have been from a very long distance away. Is that a possibility technologically?
It's not true that it would have to be from a long distance away.
Why not?
I'm not going to go into that any further.
Okay. All right. Well, I can infer from that then that submarines would have the ability to evade civilian standard sonar and radar.
There are tremendous technologies that I was aware of back in the 70s, for God's sakes. You can only imagine how far they've come since then. Back in those days, we had a saying, and this is a saying that the bubbleheads had, and they said that there are two types of vessels, targets and submarines.
Okay. Now, you actually, you were in the U.S. Navy.
Yes, 6 years.
And you served aboard a submarine.
No, I served aboard the John F. Kennedy, an aircraft carrier.
Did that make you a little nervous to hear them say there are targets and then there are submarines?
If you think about it, right? I've been in North Atlantic crossings in some of the worst storms, and it's 92 feet from the surface of the water to the flight deck. And we had waves crashing over the top of the flight deck. And watching off the sponson, destroyers, huge destroyers, following in the wake of our aircraft carrier. When they would dip down with their nose coming down, when a wave would come up, the wave would come up over top, they would disappear under the water for several seconds and pop back up. So I'm of the opinion there are targets and there are submarines, and I agree.
Okay, fair enough.
And we had great anti-submarine warfare guys. We were able to spot and find submarines on a regular basis. But the really good sub-captains don't get spotted.
Okay, and my question now is technological. Is there technologically a huge difference between the radar and sonar that civilians can get for their ships and what is available for the military?
Dear God, yes. They would never allow that into civilian hands.
Okay. So
not the advanced stuff.
I'm sorry?
Not the advanced stuff.
Okay. So with civilian sonar and radar, then, you could conceivably have a sub under you and not know it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It happens all the time, by the way.
Fair enough. Your work in the U.S. Navy did not include remote viewing. This is something that you did later. This is something you developed, you learned later. It would seem to me that the U.S. Navy would be somewhat nervous about people like you learning remote viewing, and we'll get your comments on that when we come back. We have to step away for a break. We shall return, though, right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Jeff Harvey. We are on final approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show, and we've been hearing some amazing, amazing stuff about this remote viewing of the object that has been discovered, and we have side-scan sonar images of it on the bottom of the Baltic, and we've had some amazing shows about this object. Tonight, we're talking with Jeff Harvey. Jeff Harvey, formerly in the U.S. Navy. And, Jeff, back when you were in the U.S. Navy, I'm going to pick up with that question that I started with just before the break. Now, when you were in the U.S. Navy, you were into top secret electronics on board the ship, right?
I only have secret clearance, but my equipment was in spaces that were way above top secret.
Okay. Walter, so you're dealing with electronics that were way above top secret, and Walter was chief of counter-espionage operations at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base when he was U.S. Air Force OSI. So here's the question. Aren't those guys back in the military nervous about you guys having this ability to do remote viewing now?
I'm sure they're nervous about the ability, but the bottom line is, if you think about this, they're so far ahead. They're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years ahead of anything you're ever going to see in the public. They're not too concerned about it, because if we were to go and target those technologies and elucidate them, do a whole set of remote viewing sessions on them, and elucidate them, no one in the country would believe it. The stuff is so far advanced. So they don't really have too much concern that we're going to go spewing out what their latest tools and toys are. What they're more concerned with is us perhaps stumbling upon their agenda and putting the agenda out, because that's something that's far more believable than the actual technologies. And maybe that's the reason why I had the implant. Who knows?
All right. Now, Walter took a look at this object. When you talked with him on the telephone, was he having sort of a holy crap moment?
Walter would not have a holy crap moment. Walter and you are very similar in many respects. much more pragmatic as individuals. These are things that are so inside of their paradigm that it's like a child playing with a tinker toy. It's just natural to them. So that's nothing that would give him any pause at all.
I think I asked this, but I want to probe into this a little bit more. Walter was of the opinion, I believe you said, that this is a craft.
That's what we both seem to feel is the case. We differ on how it got to that location, and I'm not sure I differ with him. I'm just giving you the opinion from my session, but when I look at his and when I talk to him about it, it's entirely possible that this thing actually came down from above, went through the water at high velocity, and when it got to that arching object, it took a sharp turn. Not a ricochet, but a sharp turn. And what we may be looking at is it actually tumbling down to the bottom, and that's what it was. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of things that are possible. A craft up on top being a mothership, it being a downed craft, damaged craft, surveillance craft, or it could very well be only one object that came from up above, and that's what I saw. We don't know the answer.
Yeah, we're picking up the roar of jets from your audio again.
Yeah, I just heard that.
Yeah.
It's dying back down now.
Yeah. So, was he of the opinion that this craft is currently occupied?
We didn't get into that any further because we didn't have a lot of time. He was very short on time. All I got a chance to do was to call him, tell him about some of the connecting points, and then show him the similarity between my original S3 and his ST and my ST. Mm-hmm. Because the items are so similar, we know we hit it. There are way too many components in here that agree for us not to have been looking at the same thing and getting data that's 100% accurate.
Do you think that these recovery ships should be trying to recover this based on what you have seen, or do you think they are better off to leave it alone?
You mean the civilian ships?
Yeah.
I think every attempt should be made to contact the occupants. That's my personal opinion. How you go about that, based on the problem with the melted remains of the tethered object, you might want to be a little more delicate about the way you knock on the front door.
How would you do it?
I would use a team of folks using a combination of radionics and remote viewing and do a direct, targeted, very soft hello. And then if I were going to do a physical intervention, I would go down there and I would park outside of the craft a short distance away, so that it was clear that my intent was to be invited contact, not to actually go and sneak up on the skin of the ship and knock on it and ping on it and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about an advanced being that can get in a craft like this and get down there, you really want to be gentle because they have the ability to wipe you out in a couple of seconds. So why would you not be very gentle, very respectful, as if you're going to your neighbor's home and seeing what they were doing for the weekend?
Do you think there has been contact between whoever's in that craft and any government?
My suspicion is yes. The reason why I say that is the math on this whole thing does not add up. Number one, we didn't stop those civilian ships from doing anything. So it's not one of ours. Number two, those tethered objects got wiped out. Number three, if you look at this whole object, I'm almost of the opinion it's there with our permission. So if that's the case, there had to have been contact with a government.
Any idea which government?
Certain ours. We control 99% of everything going on out there.
Even in the Baltic?
Yep.
Okay, so there's been contact. Do you think there is going to be contact with non-governments? And we only have about 30 seconds here.
I honestly don't know. I can't see why they would. There's no reason why they would. If they're in contact with the governments that are controlling everything, why would they want to talk to the folks down at the bottom end of the telephone pole or totem pole?
Yeah. Well, I certainly can agree with that concept. But what if civilians initiate contact? 10 seconds. Do you think they will answer back?
If they do it in the right manner, yes. And I don't think that any kind of electromotive force device like a radio is going to get the job done. It's got to all be done telepathically.
All right. Well, if you will, Jeff, stay on line with me here for just a minute, and let me thank you for being with us this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, you can click Jeff's picture on my website. It will take you to his website. It is linked. And that's going to do it. That's a wrap for this evening. You wanted an update? You got an update. And maybe a different kind of update than you were looking for. But you did ask. Some of you did ask for remote viewing. And that's what we have provided for you here this evening. The reports of two seasoned remote viewers who happen also to have a lot of military experience and knowledge. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.